Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Tuesday, December 6th. Hi, Tori.
Hello.
Today we have a superhero in the studio.
Dun-da-da-da!
Her name is Tori Shulman. And so you did a brave, noble thing today.
I sure did.
You didn't even get a chance to tell me, so go ahead. Let's hear what
happened.
Okay,
so I'm coming to work. I've got my coffee and my walnuts, which sounds like the grossest breakfast you've ever heard. And I'm crossing Hollywood and La Cienega, like a real busy street, and I see two dogs in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard by themselves. And they look healthy and they look fed, but they are scared out of their mind. And I pull the car over and I run over and I grab one, and then the other takes off, and I call the number, and I'm running after the other one. And if you guys don't know, I'm not a runner. I don't run unless I think you said rum, and then I'm like with you. So I'm chasing the other one, and it goes to a house, and I knock on the door, and the guy opens, and I was like, "Is this your dog?" And he's like, "Yes." Then I was like, "I have the other dog in my car." And it turns out they got out of the yard, and they were about to be hit.
Wow.
So he was so thankful, so happy. So he said, "Happy holidays. This would have been the worst Christmas ever." And his whole house was decorated.
Really?
So, yeah.
But that's, don't you think it's irresponsible, though? I mean,
well, he said he couldn't believe they got out of the, there must have been a hole in the yard. He was like, "I can't believe they got out of the yard." So he went to go look for it. While when we drove away, he was looking for the hole.
Now, weren't you scared, like you'd run into traffic?
I did, but you know me, I like to, I feel like I'm in a Hollywood movie.
Right, like so in I just the middle said, of the street
and
all alone.
Totally, and I go, "Everybody stop!" And I put my hand, no. I mean, they were running right into it, so they were just leaving the curb, so I didn't have to stop any traffic, but I thought, I would have, yeah. You know me, for a dog, I would have jumped into traffic.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God. But no one was stopping, and so, you know, you got to do something.
That's true. Well, heroic action by Tori on her way to work.
And I lost some calories. There you go. Burned some calories.
You did your deed for the day.
I did.
There you go.
Just one. I only have to do one mitzvah.
In a few minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in, and we're going to talk about interesting things like the science of love.
Mm.
And this is going to be interesting.
Mon amour.
Yes, a lot to talk about that, relationships, dating, so forth. They have like the four phases of a relationship or love. Do you know what they are? I mean, which way? It's probably hard to figure
well,
out.
Well, I bet
right?
like attraction.
Number one.
Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. Okay.
Whoa. Number two.
Partnership, companionship.
Was that? I think that's
three.
Too soon, maybe.
Too soon?
No?
Too soon? Okay.
I don't know, although it's not listed.
Okay, what's next?
Dating.
Okay, sure.
So first you're attracted, then you date.
Right.
The next one is falling in love.
Right.
And the fourth is real love.
Okay.
And I think that's the partner you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes,
you know?
Real love, companionship.
Yeah, because you passed falling in love now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're at the fourth stage.
I'm deep. I'm fourth.
Exactly.
I'm
real
fourth.
Love. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the thing is though, I guess there's like a science to it, and it's very interesting to see.
Oh,
but,
I can't wait.
But the interesting thing is they put falling in love after dating, you know. Well, I guess that makes sense,
yeah.
Right? You can't fall in love before you
no,
date someone.
Can't do it.
Unless it's a love at first sight.
Unless it's Brad Pitt, like
which
one of those.
We can
yeah.
ask her about
that's
that.
That's true, you know? If there's any science to that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Even with Brad Pitt, you'd probably be just infatuated with him and want to go to bed with
yes.
him. I don't know if you'd want to marry
no.
him the first time
no.
you met him. You
I
know?
Mean, though, I do question, maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
It is Brad
it is
Pitt.
No, no, no.
I'm just saying if he was just an ordinary person.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I've no interest.
Yeah, right?
No, no. No, that's just creepy.
I know. So this is going to be interesting, folks. A lot of things to talk about. I thought maybe we'd just give like headlines or
oh,
something.
Yeah.
But we do have some time to talk. So the big news is Lady Gaga revealed she has PTSD.
Yeah, she does.
Wow.
Yes, she does.
That's a pretty big deal.
Yes.
She was sitting with a group of LGBT people in New York. And she said that she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. apparently, and this was not a secret, that she had been raped at 19.
Correct.
So this was known, but I guess nobody knew that she had a mental issue because of it.
She, so what's really weird is I'm the pop culture correspondent at Fox.
Yes.
And I was in the green room, and I was sitting with a girl who had was going on because Gaga had organized a group of, I think, 100 women and men that had been sexually assaulted. And they all did, it was like the day, it was like the National Day of Sexual Assault, you know, recognition or awareness. And they all got tattoos. And so she showed me the tattoo. So Gaga's been very open about this. Must have been about a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So Gaga's been very open as a rape survivor and sexual assault victim. But to announce to, you know, Pete, of course, you'd think everyone would have some kind of post-traumatic after something like that.
Right. That's true.
But, you know, thank God she brings it into the forefront. I mean, this girl had was a secret until Gaga invited her. And then it was like an outpouring of love. So for anyone who was too scared to get help or anything, good for Gaga, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is an example for a lot of young women, or not necessarily young, I mean at any age you can
any
get
age,
raped.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what I don't understand is how cruel can you be, because this is a, I think rape destroys a woman's soul in a way.
I understand.
At least damages it quite a bit.
It touches it in a bad way.
It's not just a sexual act. I mean, this is something that you know, because it's so
violating.
It
couldn't be more invasive. It couldn't be more invasive without your willing it to be. So it couldn't be more like you were just such a. It couldn't be more of a victim.
And especially when it's a man that's usually strong against a woman who's usually weaker.
And usually sometimes they know each other. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, it's
awful. You know, and that's the thing. I was going to bring this up because about knowing each other. First, the headline on this one is in India, a U.S. tourist alleges that she was gang raped in New Delhi in a hotel, a five-star hotel by five men.
Oh, my God.
That she had been drugged.
Well, if it's a five-star hotel, you should have had cameras.
Maybe not in the room.
Maybe you'd think there would. Oh, maybe I see.
Not in the room.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
If
you
it's
want
a hotel.
The camera in the
no,
room?
I was just thinking, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah, but they probably do have some record of them going in or whatever, right?
It's awful.
Yeah. But so the thing is that this is not the first time. I mean, I know over the past couple of years, I've mentioned this a few times in India.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, I want you to understand this, 90% of females in India experience sexual harassment.
That's just insane.
Yeah. So we'll come back to this because I see our guest is calling a little bit early. Well, I think she just hung up again. But she's calling a little bit early, but we'll take the call as soon as she calls in again. But 90% of females in India experience sexual harassment.
And I think of it, if it's 90%, some people aren't even reporting it. So that's closer to 100%.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's
exactly.
Awful.
Like, in other words, every female in India has been through something like this. You know, and look at this. Now, 62% of men and 35% of women think women provoke men by the way they dress.
The dressing, yeah, that's really bad.
I mean, even the women think so.
A lot of women. The women shaming is incredibly, I mean.
That's how they're raised. They're raised that this is normal. I mean, think about it. If 90% experience this or 100.
And then you think it's sort of what you have to do. The other thing is there's a lot of people that say in protest, there's signs saying, like, it doesn't matter what I wear. This person shouldn't rape me. I mean, that's
exactly.
Become a big thing, too.
That has nothing
Zero.
To do with it.
You
nothing.
Should be. Yeah, raise your kid not to rape someone. How about that? And then the whole thing with that swimmer when he raped that girl and got 3 months in jail.
Yes.
Ugh. I mean, it's just...
That's disgusting,
disgusting.
Man.
Disgusting.
He destroyed a life and he only sits there for 3 months, you know?
And the rape victim spoke out, wrote a letter. I mean, she's become a huge advocate for rape awareness and also light sentencing. I mean, the judge, they've been protesting the judge ever since.
Do you think a woman judge would have done the same thing?
See, that there's the
or
thing.
Could have.
But see, sometimes you don't know. Again, like, we have female shaming and you don't know
That's
what a woman
true.
Feels. I think I would hope a woman would understand more. I would hope, but I can't say that for
right,
sure.
Right, because she might say, a woman judge might also say, well, she was
You could be that kind
it.
Of a woman, a horrible woman. Yeah,
right.
I mean, you could be that kind
inviting
of a.
Inviting
Yeah, but you don't know anybody's, you can't generalize, but I would hope a woman to a woman would have some sense of recognition because it's different for a man. It really is. There's something more invasive for the woman.
Although I don't understand how you can be a moral human being, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, and think this is okay and the light sentences. You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense.
It's
so.
Basic human rights.
Right.
Basic.
Exactly.
Food, water, protection of your own body. That's it.
Yeah. But I'm here to say I have just as much to say about or against rape as the next woman or the next person.
Good for you.
You know? I mean, it's totally like a terrible. I can't think of anything. You know what's worse? Molestation of kids. Mm-hmm. That would be worse, which is rape as well. There's no consent.
Mm-hmm. It's when you get to those levels of evil,
yes.
you don't understand. There's
you don't
no understanding.
Understand. Right.
Yeah, and you can't. And there's something. A lot of people say castration. In some countries, it's castration of those people because it's so evil that you think you have to do something as evil back.
Right, exactly. You know, something drastic.
Drastic, yeah.
Without killing them.
But it's great that men are now speaking up. In the 90s, it was a big thing. My dad would go, if we ever did, like, you know, a walk or a protest, and he came. There weren't a lot of men around at that time discussing
for rape.
For rape awareness.
Rape?
Yeah.
Really?
And that, well, it wasn't really. Remember, we always talk about that pop culture. And then people like Gaga and people like admitted to it and opened up to it, and all of a sudden became discussable, and more people would talk about it. And then men started joining the movement, and not that there haven't been men, but it's become a much more equal discussion between gender, really.
And it should be.
It should be.
Absolutely. You know? And like you said, raise your kids not to rape.
Yeah.
That's the way it should
raise
work.
Your kids not to be a horrible human being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So imagine, and this is not the first time a Western woman had been attacked, like I said. We reported it several times. But, I mean, by five guys, it's like, imagine the cowardice of these guys to overpower a woman, you know? I mean, how many guys, it's not like you're a big deal, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's awful. And it's part of the culture. In some Saudi Arabia, there's a lot, like in Rwanda, there's a huge amounts of rape. I mean, there's in certain parts of the country, the culture for the man is that this isn't wrong, that I get to do this, that I belong, that you are submissive and lower than me. And it's sickening. It's
exactly
sickening.
And it is the culture.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something to say against multiculturalism, but that's for another conversation.
Hopefully we can bleed into each other the better one, but man, that's why I have no interest in going to certain parts of the world.
Yeah.
Because I don't get it.
Who wants to get involved
in that? I don't
want
to get it. I don't even want to know the culture. It's hard. It's hard for me to really understand the culture.
Exactly.
So,
you know, and because it's like you realize it doesn't matter even if you view it from their culture, from their perspective, there's nothing moral about anything that they do.
No matter what language you speak, it's still wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that comes from I don't know, from a lack of belief in something, you know, faith in something, I don't know.
Certainly a lack of belief that women are equal.
Right.
Certainly a lack of equality. I mean, that's just how, just
or
pieces
human
of dirt.
Decency, yeah. You know, dignity and stuff.
So
Lady Gaga opened up that conversation, which is a cool thing.
And what's cool is she's going to be doing the Super Bowl. So it's not like she's just such a woman. This is all in a women's thing. This is like a woman who's really the mainstream of pop culture. She's doing the Super Bowl. That's guys, men.
No,
and
absolutely.
She's opening up to this. This is great.
Yeah, you know. And I got to tell you, I like the way she looks now. I like her best.
And she's so classy now.
But she's real now.
Yeah, she's
this is her.
Very
you know?
Much so.
It's not the meat dress.
Not at
all.
And she said that on Stern, she said, I look back and I started hearing myself in interviews, and I had an accent, and she was like, where the hell did that come from?
Right.
And she was like, I was just not myself. So she's gone through a lot of depression, and she's been very open about it, but she's much more herself now. And then when you're most yourself, you can get in touch with these feelings,
right?
You know, and do something about them.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, and she's beautiful, she's talented, she's an influence on a lot
huge,
of people
huge.
A lot of people, so I can relate to her finally. I can connect to that,
which is nice. You know, and I think the Super Bowl, you're going to, again, so many people are watching. Her voice is going to blow your mind.
Mm.
Such a good voice. It's not just like meat dress and weirdos. It's
I know.
Beautiful, beautiful voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. So Lady Gaga, revealing a big deal.
Yeah.
A big deal.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is stuff that soldiers
vulnerable.
Get. Yeah. You know, in war. So
yeah, because exactly, not only is she speaking out for women and men who have been victims of sexual assault, PTSD is now being discussed more, which we all have been discussing, but soldiers really feel like this has gotten pushed under the rug.
It really
so
has,
good for
know?
Her to again bring that up for this community.
I know, and there's a lot of suicide in that community.
Huge amounts.
A lot
huge.
Of suicide, you know, and people talk about it. I don't know what can be done, but I think it's a very, very tragic thing that will send someone to defend us, and then they come back.
There's no
half a person. Yeah,
and there's no, you know, when they come back, there is not a lot for them to programs to get into, to transfer. It should be the number one thing we do in this country, and we don't.
Yeah, you know, I mean, how do you reintegrate someone who who saw battle and combat and people dying?
And I got to be honest, you know, I hate Trump with every part of my being, but he has been really good about bringing up the fact that we aren't good to our veterans and that he is going to do something about it. I don't know if he's actually going to do anything, but man, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I agree with him on that one slice of an issue.
Okay, good. So at least you brought it up and you admitted it. Absolutely. So that's a brave thing.
Yeah, I know. God, please bless me. No, but seriously, he has brought it up that it's just horrendous. Not that he's going to do anything about it, maybe, but it is something that needs to be discussed.
Exactly,
more.
And it needs to be brought to the surface. And you're right. That's what it's about, you know. I remember the movie Deer Hunter. Do you remember one?
Oh, yeah.
And that one really dealt with this. I mean, that was the Vietnam War.
And that was Vietnam is when we saw the shock face. People didn't know what to call it, but people were coming back with their eyes wide open and they weren't speaking or the same person. It was the Vietnam.
Yeah, like shell shock.
Shell shock, exactly. Right. That's what they called it. And the shock face and finally it was, you know, diagnosed with science. And once you get science in your backing, then there's hopefully leading to cures and stuff. But it's a real thing.
It really is. You know, I remember when I moved here from Israel in the 70s, I ran into some guys that actually had been to Vietnam.
Wow.
And they come back and they're screwed up completely. Yeah. I mean, drugs, you know, relationships.
Anything to escape.
Don't work because, I mean, to me, look, my theory is when you send someone to become a soldier in combat, you pretty much take a civilian, you deconstruct them and build them into a fighting machine.
Absolutely.
Let me get take our guest here so we don't have to keep her waiting. And so we're going to be joined by Don. Don Messler, thank you for joining us. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, thank you, Sam.
Of course, Don. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm here with Tori.
Hello, Don.
Hi, Tori.
Good morning. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling you from Florida.
Whoa.
She's afternoon here.
She said it, Florida.
Yeah. where in Florida exactly?
Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, I see. Okay. I've never been there. I hear it's nice. So I
love Florida.
There you go. And has that been your home for a while?
Yes, I've been here about 13 years.
Oh, wow. Very cool. So
it's not L.A., but it's a good substitute.
it's not L.A., you know, but it's a different kind of place, different vibe. So what made you move there? Where did you live before that?
I lived on the East Coast, up and down the East Coast, and I just kept getting progressively warmer. I started out in Syracuse, New York.
Well, that's cold.
Yes.
went
to Maryland, North Carolina, and I just kept moving. I finally felt warm here, so I stayed.
That's good.
There
I
you
like
go.
It.
Cool. And so you keep busy there. The reason we wanted you on the show is because you have very relevant, interesting stuff to say. And you basically talk about the science of love, right?
Correct.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean? And then we'll discuss a little bit the specifics.
Okay. Well, I'm a biologist. I've actually been a biology professor for right now I'm adjuncting for about 12 years. And I started getting interested in love mostly because I needed it. My love life was terrible. And I started looking into how love worked. And what I discovered is that love is actually happens in your brain, and it's what's happening with neurotransmitters and effects that it has on your brain. And what I learned is there's actually four distinctive phases when it comes to love, and sometimes we get those phases confused, and that confusion can create problems and sometimes heartbreak.
It's such a scientist's way of looking at that. That's such a scientist. Let me look at the neurotransmitters of love. That's so funny.
I know.
So
that's
cool.
Why you'll have to simplify it for
I
us
like
too,
that.
You know?
So how did you find the four stages? Was it different things happening in the body, different dopamine levels, different serotonin levels?
Correct. The first stage is actually attraction, which has nothing to do with love, and that's norepinephrine.
Oh.
It's a fight or flight response, so it's meant to be temporary. It's basically just to get your attention.
Oh.
Sometimes we think it's love, and we make the mistake of making that conclusion and jumping into a relationship. Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee did that. They met and married within 96 hours.
I see. So that's
so they fell in love as soon as they were attracted to each other.
Where they thought they would end.
They thought they did.
Yeah.
So it's like a fight or flight, like the Neanderthals. Like you see something and you run away, or you see something, you run to it. It's just like that basic.
Right. Well, we call it fight or flight, but there's actually four Fs. There's fight, flight, feed, causes us to get hungry. And then the other one is, best way to say it is have fun.
Oh. I think I'm in feed the whole time.
Yeah. So when we get nervous, when we feel anxiety, our body wants to do one of those four things.
Either
run, feed, fight, or become sexual.
I see. The other F.
Yeah.
I see. I didn't understand it before. Now I'm on board.
There you go.
Okay.
Okay. So now, that's very interesting. Now, first of all, so you said you had, you weren't good at relationships, or your relationship was terrible, and you decided, I'm going to examine this scientifically. How did you get into biology in the first place?
Because I didn't like the math and biochemistry.
Her answers are so real.
There you go. That's the funny thing is my son is going into biochemistry now. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, that sounds very intense. So it's a lot more math and biochemistry than. But I love biology.
I love biology too. I just didn't like physical chemistry. That was a tough one.
Yeah, that was tough.
I ended my relationship.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. So what did you find you were falling into patterns for your own love life that started this, the catalyst, if you will?
Well, I was, like I said, a biology professor, so I was kind of like a nerd girl in a way, but I was attracted to bad boy bikers.
Nice.
Oh, good. Can you imagine your college professor on a bike?
Totally. I love this. I'm getting a great picture.
Yeah.
I even bought a motorcycle at one point.
Oh, badass.
Yeah.
I'd ride it on the campus.
Wow. So, really? So these bad boys, I guess, weren't so loyal or faithful, or they just weren't good for you? Is that what you sort of felt?
Well, they kept marrying other people.
That's a good reason.
A great answer.
Yeah,
again.
Good reason.
Super good reason.
Yeah, there you go. So,
wow.
Yeah, so, okay, so you decided, okay, that's it. Now, okay, so now I see here there's a lot of things you cover. Now, you wrote a book, right? And we want to discuss that a little bit. What's the title of the book?
It's called Men Chase, Women Choose: The Neuroscience of Meeting, Dating, Losing Your Mind, and Finding True Love.
Very funny. I like the humor of it.
The subtitle is those four phases. Meeting, dating, the second phase. Losing your mind is where you fall in love.
Yeah, because I kind of want to go to the next. Yeah, I want to go to the next stage. So we're in attraction. Yeah. Now, what the next stage is.
No, but wait a minute. Oh. The attraction, I still want to go somewhere.
Okay.
Now, so are you saying attraction is a totally biological thing? There's nothing really like psychological about it? Like, here's a beautiful woman, here's a very attractive guy, they get your attention. Is it only biological?
Well, I don't know where the line is between biological and psychological.
I see.
There is a difference there somewhere, but I don't know exactly where that line is. They're starting to become bringing a lot more neuroscience into psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can tell from the brain, from the neurotransmitters, is that all it is really the fight or flight response.
You're just apes. We're just apes.
Yeah, you're just attracted. It's just basically getting your attention. It could be the love of your life, or it could be a big black bear that's about to kill you. It's just trying to, your body's going, hey, something's happening here.
Here's my attraction is lit up.
I see. Okay.
My awareness.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So that's how you sort of like
pay attention.
You have to stand out in the crowd,
yeah,
and then you can attract somebody.
But be careful, because what she's saying is you can confuse this paying attention to falling in love.
Yeah, right.
So it's just paying attention.
Exactly. And then you start dating because you realize that, well, at least we like each other, right? So you start dating.
Correct.
Now, how long? Go ahead.
Well, the dating process is you build up neurotransmitters to fall in love.
Oh.
Men and women build up neurotransmitters differently. And that's where the dopamine you had mentioned before, that's where that kicks in.
Oh.
Dopamine is one of them. The other one is oxytocin for women. That's where we build up trust.
Oh.
We kiss and cuddle. We start building up oxytocin, and then we can fall in love. For men, it's dopamine, a little bit of testosterone and some vasopressin.
Whoa.
The problem with the way it works is that it's different for men or for women to fall in love, and actually, when one falls in love, the other might not, depending on how you do it. So if you become more sexual quickly, a woman will fall in love more easily. A man may not fall
in love. Oh, and is that because the oxytocin, like when you're cuddling and holding a baby close, like that's when you're, you know, having sex and stuff, that's more of the woman's getting more and more of those, and the man's not getting what he needs.
Right. When a woman produces, when it has an orgasm,
yeah,
she produces a whole lot of oxytocin.
Oh, okay.
So she's more likely to fall in love. A man produces vasopressin, but the vasopressin goes away really quickly after he has sex.
Well, you see, and that explains the differences between men and women, you know, and sometimes people don't want to really address it.
But scientifically, they are
different.
Scientifically, yeah,
we're very different, and yet we're alike in so many ways. But so that's very interesting. Now, so since we're on this, I wanted to know, the next step is falling in love. Now, so at what point would you say most sex happens? Does it happen during dating or falling in love? Or, I mean, it probably has changed over the generations, mm-hmm, right?
Well, once a woman has sex, she's pretty much done. She's going to fall in love.
Hmm.
Well, in order for, here's the wild part. In order for you to fall in love about the same time, your grandmother, I did a TED Talk on this, and I said the TED Talk was basically saying your grandmother's right. Because my grandmother used to say, before you have become in a sexual relationship, you should ask for a commitment. So I did the research on it and said, wondered if commitment had anything to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was amazing. A Harvard study discovered that when a man commits to a woman, his testosterone drops. That makes him more susceptible to oxytocin, mm, and also more likely to fall in love. Whoa. Do that tipping point of falling in love.
Is committed, do you mean like monogamy, when you're like, you're with me, I'm with,
yes,
you? That's just committed.
Mutually exclusive, yes.
Okay, wow. That's so scientifically.
Very interesting, right?
You know, it's funny, the Millionaire Matchmaker on Bravo always said this.
Really?
She said you have to have monogamy before sex. Always.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
a,
yeah,
commitment,
yeah, yeah,
before. And now there's backing, you know, the scientific backing.
That's true, yeah.
Interesting.
Right. It was anecdotal, but now we know the truth. Now
I
we
see.
Know the science behind it.
Nice.
Now, so let me ask you this now. I mean, can we really generalize and say that once a woman has an orgasm, she falls in love?
Well, no, not necessarily. She has to have oxytocin and dopamine, so she has to be happy about the orgasm.
No, duh. Who's that, right?
Well, you could have a one-night stand and be like just getting the dopamine or whatever, but you need both.
Yeah.
I see.
Right. A one-night stand would probably give you the oxytocin, but not the dopamine.
Yeah. The one-night stand will give you half, but the full, yeah, totally. Okay. I'm on board with that. That's totally true.
Gotcha. Okay. So the one-night stand happens before, between the attraction and the dating. That's pretty much right.
If you have a woman couldn't fall in love with a one night stand. If she has an orgasm and she's excited about seeing the guy, about the potential of a relationship, then she may fall in love. And here's the problem. Once you fall in love, all kinds of crazy things happen to your brain, including parts of your brain shutting down.
Oh, God.
So
right.
The ventral medial prefrontal cortex, that's the part of the brain that judges the other person,
right,
shuts down when you fall in love.
So everything looks good. Everything looks good.
That's
it's unicorns, great, and rainbows, great, and puppies.
Yeah. So you
exactly.
Get,
and the other part is your serotonin, the hormone of happiness. You, what do you think? Up or down?
I would think up, but you're scaring me.
No, that's right. Everybody says up. It goes down. It drops to the level of someone with OCD. That's why you're so obsessed when you fall in love.
Oh, my God. So, that's so amazing.
That woman who thinks she can have a one-night stand and then she gets excited about a potential relationship with the guy, next thing you know, she's obsessed. She's rattling around his windows at night trying to peek inside to see where he's at.
How do you know me?
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
Because I was that girl too.
So it becomes, because I've had, you know, in high school when you say you're in love and your first loves, it was an obsession. It really was like OCD. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels. And it was not a comfortable feeling.
That's
so
true.
It's because my serotonin's gone down and I'm literally feeling, I mean, it was not that I was a creep. I mean, now I'm coming across a little aggressive, but right, it would get to that point of like, I've got to know where they are at all times. And that's sort of social media feeling too, of like obsessively knowing where they are.
Sounds codependence to me.
Right.
Yeah.
At the same time, your cortisol level skyrockets. So while you're obsessed, you can't eat, you can't sleep, right, your body's releasing all the glucose stores, so you have all this energy, and that's why you're running around this house driving this neighborhood.
Wow. So what's the biological reasoning for that, for the obsessive? Is it so that if you do find the right one, it's working for you?
Well, the way nature has it set up is if you're hopefully you two both fall in love
at the same time. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're going to stay together, and this only lasts for a certain period of time, but it's enough time to produce a child and get it through its first year.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's
so
the danger zone.
Whoa. So then I totally relate to what you said. It doesn't last forever, you know, just for a certain period of time, because you know, sometimes you wonder, you know, do I really want to? Or let's put it this way: many people realize that, you know, I don't want to be just with one person for the rest of my life. I want to try different people.
Yeah, I wonder
so you
what
get into
right.
two, three different relationships.
And what's the science behind that with the monogamy? Are we supposed to, as humans, be with one person,
no,
or
no,
are
but
we supposed
be
to
be with one person, but one at a time? What I'm saying is multiple people in your life, but at different times, like different relationships.
Yeah.
You get divorced, get remarried.
I see. Is that sort of what our biological background's made to do, Don?
Well, most of the evidence supports that falling in love is really about personal growth. We produce things that are called nerve growth factors. So our brain expands. We learn new ideas. We're also attracted to people of opposite traits. So we incorporate some of those new traits into us. So we're actually growing as individuals.
Mm.
But sometimes we grow apart, and other times we stop growing. And when we get to that point, it would be a good idea to break off. And you can fall in love several times in your lifetime.
Well, there you go, Sam.
Definitely. No, I mean, I can attest to that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I've had several relationships in my life and been grateful for each one of them. And I've, like you said, I've seen growth. You know, it's like every new relationship shows growth compared to the one before.
And when you feel the growth has stopped is when it sort of ended, I bet, is when it sort of concluded. When the growth
stops.
It could be, or it could mean that you need to grow more personally. It doesn't, just because we grow apart sometimes, doesn't mean the relationship's over. And there's actually a lot of what you can do as a person. If you become more selfish, that could end the relationship too. So maybe your growth time is to decrease anxiety and not become and become more loving.
Hmm.
So that could be a way of continuing on the relationship. So it doesn't necessarily have to break. So if you're one of those people that every couple years you go to another relationship, you might want to take some soul searching and see if it's something that you may be needing to grow into.
Fascinating.
That's true. If you feel you can't grow in a relationship or something and you keep changing partners,
maybe it's just you need to grow yourself.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Wow. Well, Don Messler, I mean, you know, we could talk about this for days, right?
I'm
I mean,
so
there's so
into
much
this.
To it. But that's why you wrote the book, Men Chase, Women Choose. So tell us where we can get it. How can people find you? How can they get a hold of you to get more of to really get answers to more of what you do, because it made me look at things in a whole different
way. Yeah, I kind of want to get the book. I'm like,
yeah.
Now I'm like very interested.
Yeah, I mean, if you break it down to four different, you know, phases and it makes sense to me, I can follow that
and
see at what point in the process I'm with my relationships.
Yeah, it makes it simpler.
Yeah.
Right. I like to say that love is not just logical, it's biological. Joke.
I like it. No, I like that joke.
No, I like it. Yeah, it's a meme, you know.
Yeah.
More than a joke. But
true.
You just put it on Facebook or something. But Don,
you can reach me.
Yes.
You can reach me at dawnmassler.com, dawnmassler.com. The books are available in any bookstore, on Amazon. It's also audiobook and Kindle. You can find me on YouTube at Don Messler TV, and you can look at me on Facebook, either my name or Love Biologist Don Messler. And if you have any questions, I'll be willing to answer those. You can contact me through my website or Facebook. If you've got questions, I create videos sometimes to answer people's questions to help them out. so I'd be willing to do that.
And too. You can really read this for, if let's say I'm married and like madly in love, I can read this as much as my friend who's like a one night stand person, right? Anybody can.
Absolutely, because I do give you, at each phase, I give you tips to help that phase. So like for true love, if you've been married for a long time, sometimes it's going to grow stale. So I give you tips on how to get that back, because
yeah,
basically dopamine decreases after a while because you reach saturation.
Mm.
So we need to do other things to stimulate dopamine. And that's the neurotransmitter of passion.
Mm.
So doing new and novel things can help recreate the passion and bring the sizzle back into your relationship.
Like go kayaking or camping or something, you know, something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
New skills, take an art class.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's the thing, we are biological beings, you know, and we have the thing I like about science is it's like truth,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, and you don't even have to believe
it.
Right? It's like, and what's Neil deGrasse Tyson says, even if you don't believe in climate change, it's still true.
Right,
science is true, if you, even if you don't believe in it.
Exactly. It's the truth.
Right, I have, the book is, I think, 260 pages, and I have 270 peer-reviewed journal references.
Wow.
Wow.
Damn, so you're backed up, baby.
Yes, you've done your work. Don Masler, thank you so much for joining us. Give our regards to everybody in the Fort Lauderdale.
Fantastic.
And
so interesting. Go get that book.
Yes, and you're always welcome back on the show. I mean, this is fascinating. It's very relevant. And I think people would like to know more about it. And that's why you have your book. Everybody, get it. Men chase, women choose. I've always believed that's exactly the case
mm-hmm.
in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we're seeing happening. Don Masler, thank you so much. All
thank
the best
you,
to you, Don.
Thank you, Don. Sam,
okay.
Thank you, Troy.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You.
So anyway, great stuff, right?
Amazing.
I mean, now I look at things differently. I'm going, okay, so which stage am I in?
And also, I look at that whole obsessive compulsive thing is so true.
Yeah.
That's when women become like stalkers on cyber stalkers. It's because we go down to OCD levels. Now it makes perfect sense.
That's true.
Now
right?
I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Thank God.
The only one.
Thank the Lord, Don. Makes me feel a little bit better. No, but it's true. I think women, and more so than men, because apparently our levels are different. We drop. There's a becomes of, you know, I don't see men doing as much as the Facebook, like going all the way back into like 2000 and seeing what they have on them.
Yeah.
So interesting.
But, you know, the thing is that as far as the biology and science of it all, when you look at nature, you realize, you know, males are supposed to, well, first of all, as a society, as a species, we're supposed to procreate, right?
Mm-hmm.
To continue our race,
mm-hmm.
to continue
the selfish
our species.
Gene.
Right. And so we are given that ability through sexuality and so forth. So that's what we do. And in order to do that, we've been programmed, we've been hardwired as males and females, you know? So we can complement each other. We can't procreate without each other.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
So we were made, so you don't have to believe in anything to understand that in nature, we complement each other. We both need each other, but we're different.
Very.
You know, it's just like in the socket and the plug, you know? You have to have, that's why they call them male and female.
The socket and the plug.
Right.
It's a great band name.
Yeah.
Socket and the plug.
Yeah, hey, if we could have Doors and Sardines.
Yeah, right. I think that's great.
Anything
socket,
will go.
That's true.
Yeah.
Socket and the plug. No, it's interesting because, and a lot of people who are, and as a feminist, you'd think I'd be like, no, women are the same, you know, blah, blah, blah. But biologically, very different.
Very different.
And need different things. And,
right.
And if you don't believe that, it doesn't matter because it's still true.
It's still true.
Totally.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what science is about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's why
truth.
We're nerds. That's why we like it.
And today, it's hard to find the truth, you know, when
oh, yes.
you think about it.
Oh, yes.
With all social media and stuff, all the fake stuff, my God, you know, there's nothing true about it.
Fake host. There's a hoax in my D.C. Did you hear about my D.C. neighborhood? Pizza place got held up with a guy with a rifle. This is right by my house.
Wow.
This was yesterday. He came in because a fake news story had gone viral that Hillary Clinton and the owner, who I know, who went to school with me, were having a child traffic sex ring in the back of this pizza restaurant. So he came to break it up with an assault rifle yesterday.
Wow.
And the entire block, this is literally seconds from my house, was shut down. Politics and Prose is a famous Washington bookstore. That was on lockdown. He came in with the assault rifle, ready to take down this child's trafficking ring, which was not happening in the back of in the pizza restaurant.
It was not.
No, I mean, so these fake stories, including, I know this came from science, but hoax stories have become sort of very important in this election, especially because Mark Zuckerberg wouldn't differentiate between them.
Right.
So Facebook stuff would go viral that you'd believe.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this is a dumb one, but
and now
it went viral.
Supposedly they're doing something, right, about fake news.
Yeah, because it just, so. I mean, it could have cost an election. So you gotta wonder where the line is. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
But yeah, exactly. And at the same time, do you want to censor?
Exactly.
You know?
But you know, yeah. you got to think twice before this. I mean, this is one of my favorite restaurants. So to all those in DC, we're thinking of you because it's terrible.
Yeah. 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 You know, I mean, we talk about this stuff. I got to bring this up. I didn't plan to, but I like listening to Dennis Prager, and you probably don't because it's totally on the other end of the spectrum. But he comes up. He's got Prager University, Prager U, and they put out videos that are like about 3 minutes long or something, and they put them on Facebook and YouTube and everywhere, and they try to explain from a conservative point of view or maybe even an objective point of view. At least that's what they try to do with, for example, in this latest thing, they had this guy who's a Muslim who was born and grew up in London. And he talks about how he was raised as a Muslim, that all Muslims need to hate the Jews, okay? That the Jews are this and that they're that, they control everything, and religion of peace toward everybody except the Jews, okay? So he says that's what we've been taught. And then he says, and then I decided to investigate for myself. And so he talks about the whole process of learning about more about the Middle East and all that, and the history of the Jews and the Muslims. And he says, but I finally decided I'm going to go to Israel. And he says, what I saw there is not apartheid. I did not see, I saw peace-seeking people, okay, frustrated with no peace process. So he saw something else, and that's all he wanted to say in the video. That's all he did. YouTube banned it as hate speech.
They're calling it hate speech?
Yes.
They banned it. You're saying they banned the video.
YouTube banned the video.
Wow.
Because they're saying this is hate speech.
Did he say all Muslims were taught to hate Jews?
I don't know if he said all, but he
maybe
said
that was why. That,
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. Why don't you look it up? Just look up on Google PragerU, and you'll probably find it. It's a licensed video. Maybe I didn't quote it correctly. That's why I want you all to see it for yourself. And then tell me if this is really a hate video.
That's
you
so
know?
Weird.
It really is, you know. I mean, they even wrote about this in like some major media places.
Well, look at this. Cover New York Times. Muslims and Jews combating hate. So it's a whole thing. And there's a huge conference trying to come together.
Where's that at?
In New Jersey.
Nice.
During a Sisterhood of Salam Shalom conference on Sunday.
Well, so nice. I welcome
thing.
That.
Yeah, absolutely.
I welcome anything that has to do with the people talking, not the government.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, the governments are never going to resolve anything. It's all about, like, we're going to do this, you're going to do that, but yeah, I mean, there's obstacles that I think are ancient to peace there. That's why I don't think it's
and that's why you need somebody who knows that ancient history. Otherwise, you're trying to solve something with a Band-Aid that's a gashing wound on the inside. You've got to have someone. And that's why I worry when Trump's setting up things that people don't know enough about what they're doing. I need someone who really knows the Middle East to be in charge of that area. I don't need Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
To be doing it, like
I know,
you know, or I just
or,
need, yeah,
Mitt Romney.
Yeah,
or,
I need somebody who really has that. That's what you really need, is the understanding of these cultures from way back, because it goes that far.
Yeah.
You know, it's ancient.
Yeah, I don't know, but it also requires objectivity, because you know, you really have to be objective there. But
that's one of the hardest knots in this global community is that little knot right there.
But again, you know, sometimes you look for the truth, and the truth is you can't change that, right? That's what
you always try. You always hope
this truth. And I leave that for everybody to look it up and see for themselves what they think about the whole situation. You know, it's just tragic that for so many years you just have people fighting and there's blood everywhere. And I mean, the whole Middle East is on fire all the the time.
Constantly.
All the time.
Yeah. I mean, talk about post-traumatic stress. Yeah. You have children growing up in that area that have seen nothing but that.
Exactly. And, you know, and Israel is just a small area of this. Think of Syria and Iraq and, you know, all the other places in Yemen. We don't even talk about that.
No.
Do you know the massacres they're doing there? It's like unbelievable.
And Assad, the whole thing is like, and how does that firecracker of a spot on our world get taken care of? And it's been decades through different presidents trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's like a hot bomb. It's just a very tricky situation.
Because it goes back for thousands of years, you know? That's the thing. It's like tribal almost. Yep. Like in Africa, it's tribal.
Aboriginal. I mean, it's really like that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, this is our thing. This is, we were destined for this. We were destined for that.
And we're talking, and, I mean, America's, what, 200 years? This is 5,000, you know? I mean, this is thousands of years.
Thousands of years.
So it's deeper felt. It's harder felt. It's in your roots. So,
exactly, you know? But what can you do? You know, I mean,
you find a diplomatic human being that can do this objectively, and that's hard.
I don't
hard.
Think there's one person.
No,
that can
no,
do
I don't
that,
think
Tori.
So either.
I really don't.
There's people that can help. Let's hope. Yeah.
You know, you have to just remember. You know what? I think America just has to remember who its friends and allies are. I think that's very important. Okay, and I think that line's been blurred over the years, but you know. So anyway, you got your political thing. I got my political thing.
Yeah, we're out. All right.
we're even today.
We're even a day.
So listen, I mean, a couple things here.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what you think about this. Angela Merkel today called for a full face veil ban in Germany. Now, France has done this already, right? Mm-hmm. Has the UK done this yet?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. So now Germany has. What do you think?
I have a lot of mixed emotions about this.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's a very complicated... It's just like we were talking about.
So I'm not going to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, but it's...
It's very charged.
It is. It is. And it isn't like I'm like the death penalty where I really believe one or the other. It's a very... And I think Merkel and leaders also have to... This is a tightrope that they have to walk. Because you see the... You see more hate crime. It's complicated. I think it's too complicated for me to know enough about. But my first instinct, of course, is to let people wear whatever they want to wear.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Of course my first instinct. Of course. That's my bleeding liberal heart. You know, I grew up in D.C. in my high school. You could wear whatever. You know, school, no dress code. So I always have believed in that and showing off whatever you feel. However, there's also a sentiment of... more hate crimes. Can we protect more people by not having that?
Right, exactly.
So I mean, it's very complicated.
It makes them stand out. You know?
Can it be a catalyst for more violence? And if that's the case, maybe we're protecting people by not. But I don't know is what the answer is, but it's complicated.
Right, but I mean, I'm just saying, if Angela Merkel said that and decided to do this, maybe there's something to it.
Right, because like, you know, in France, there's a lot of racism going on right now. But if the more it spreads, you're thinking this isn't just something we're trying to cut down on. Maybe this is trying to protect hate crimes in the future. So there isn't a sense of maliciousness to it as much as in the beginning. If Merkel's doing it, maybe there's something to it, you know.
Look, I think what I see by veil, it's sort of like saying, okay, look, I'm from somewhere else, or I believe in something different from you, and I'm going to actually make a statement and show you that I am. And people don't like that.
But like, what if I told you you couldn't travel to France and wear an American flag jacket?
If I traveled to France and
you had a cool denim, I mean, pretend that was cool.
You know what? I just, if I didn't think it's okay, I wouldn't fly there. I would just go to hell with them. You know what I'm saying?
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not like that. But look what she says. She says the full veil is not appropriate here. It should be forbidden wherever that is legally possible.
Is it the full veil? So it's, she's talking
about
like a burqa.
It does not belong to us.
And in some rights, that's a feminist point of view too. The full veil makes women very submissive and in a very lower position.
Right.
Jay Leno's wife has spent a lot of time trying to get rid of the burqa.
Right.
Because the burqa is when you can't even see through that little hole when it's fully veiled because they can't do anything. So. A lot of people think that that's just an anti-women issue as well.
That's true. I mean, some might. But you know what? They're saying now there's a map here of the world where there's a national ban, where there's a local ban, where there's a partial ban, and where there's a proposed ban. So It's growing.
But it's not the hijab. This is the full veil. Like, that's what I want to
know. I think. I don't know. They're talking about a full face veil. I don't know if they're talking about the burqa itself.
I see, but it's covering the whole face.
Right.
I see.
I think a burqa without covering is fine. Like, we have a lot of those.
Well, like hijabs, yeah. Yeah, but a burqa is like the entire, like the whole costume.
The whole.
But the full veil is something of a feminist issue, and you see feminists speaking out against it because you literally can't face the world as a woman.
Yeah.
So, in that respect, I can understand why in a first world country that's more progressive, they don't want to have that seen as a woman. But then you get into censorship. You know, maybe the woman feels more comfortable that way.
Right.
So
but
it's
you know
very
what?
Complicated.
You also have to ask yourself, if you go to their country and you behave that way,
right,
would they tolerate
right.
it?
Right. Exactly. You're right. Like, when I went to Italy even, and I went to the Vatican, my shorts were too short. Mm. And I had to change. Because,
yeah.
And simply because of respect. And that I didn't argue with it. I understood.
Exactly.
Because
you're a guest there.
I'm a guest in that
It's
in that
exactly
place,
when
right.
you go to the Wailing Wall and all that, you know, you have
to
respect the holiness
absolutely.
Of the place. You don't own it, so you can't wear whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
And if people protest that, then they're out of their minds, you know. They're being unreasonable,
But then pretend on the other side, if I am more comfortable in a full veil and Angela Merkel's telling me I can't wear that, that feels a bit like it's taking away my rights.
But I think it's still the same issue, and that is you singling people out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that opens up to hate crimes against them.
Yeah,
you know. So
I also think
what they're trying to do,
and I think it's really about the full veil. That full veil is when you cover the woman completely. Then there's, I think that's trying to push back the history that's been made in these first world countries.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So there's that too, which I do believe in. So
yeah, but there you go. At
but least it's
something
complicated
to think
isn't
about.
It?
Yeah. Yeah, very, very
interesting.
I know. Finally, baby talk helps infants learn language. So in other words, baby talk is encouraged because babies don't really listen to the words. They listen to the tones and to how we go up and down.
Yes.
And that's how we talk to babies,
and that's
right?
how you learn, exactly. And a lot of people who are babies or children that don't have a lot of parental guidance, they grow up with much lower IQs because no one's speaking to them. Literally, just because no one is talking
Whoa.
To them. They're
yeah.
alone most of the time. So even that's why you're encouraged to read. It's not for the reading. It's for the discussion, because the brain grows neurotransmitters every time they hear the talking.
Right.
So, but babies that are left alone a lot, they're stunted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk.
Exactly. You know, but you know what the funny thing is, look, some people are saying that they may feel that using exaggerated speech style is condescending or unrealistic.
Come on,
in
people.
Comparison to adult speech.
They're 0 years old. Just
yeah,
do it.
You know, come on.
They're
man.
Not feeling condescended to. Yeah. They're eating their poop. Just
exactly,
do it.
Exactly.
That's silly.
Thanks. Well, anyway, folks, thanks to Don Masler for calling in. That was
great
a very
talk.
Fascinating
very cool.
interview. What else? Today is what, Tuesday? So we still got a nice week ahead of us. We're going to have great guests, great shows. Tori, thanks as
Anytime.
Always. You're a superhero in my book
yes.
today. She saved a couple dogs.
Da-da-da-da!
And anyway, my phone's ringing, so that means we must go.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.